Welcome into another edition of the Varsity Podcast, a season-ending Varsity Podcast. Justin Barney, Sponge Franklin, thanks for joining us all year long. It has been a fun ride. End of the year, Sponge, so we're handing out kind of our best of the best honors, and what a year it was.
Yeah, we had it last week. You know, we talked about our state championship L's that we collected with our local boys, not bringing any hardware home, so that was a little tough, but you know, at least we had something to talk about with, you know, teams making runs and, you know, doing what they had to do to get to a state championship, which was, you know, fun season for those guys. And it was, you know, good to see for, you know, Mandarin, St. Augustine, Bradford, you know, those guys. And just overall, too, the season was, you know, we had some good ups and downs, some good action. So, you know, I think it was an overall good season in the 904.
Pretty good, actually. Brings us to the next point, the last year of Suburban Metro.
Yeah.
You know, in the past, since we had our last podcast, there was a FHA Board of Directors emergency meeting about the status of the state playoffs for next year, since things need to be reclassified and drawn up. And what was on the table was the end of Suburban Metro, the addition of an in-season district tournament in weeks 10 and 11, I believe, and the creation of an open division. And what came to pass was Suburban Metro is no more after 2 years and a lot more closer playoff games. The old system is back where we're going 1A through basically 8A again, and the rural division remains, and no open division tournament. That's still kind of on the shelf. So we discussed it last time. What the open division would be would essentially taking the top eight teams in the state based on Max Preps ratings and putting them into basically a four-round tournament at the end of the year instead of them going into their normal classification. So this past year would have been Coco number one seed, Chaminade two seed, those kind of guys, those heavyweights playing in a tournament. That is shelved. That is not dead yet, but it still has not been voted on or really discussed.
Do we have another meeting on that?
In total, they're drawing up classification assignments now, and I believe there's a board of directors meeting in January, and they will more than likely discuss that open division again. There was lukewarm reception on it. I like the open division format. I like it.
When we talked about it last week, I was down for it. It sounded, you know, it's like it reminds me of like the college football playoff that's coming, you know. So it's like, let's get the best eight teams from our whole state. Doesn't matter if you're, you know, small school like a Coco, you know, Trinity, versus the big dogs of, you know, Miami, Columbus, Mandarin, you know, Lakeland, you know, whoever's in that top eight, based on your ranking and your, you know, strength of schedule, strength of record, all that good stuff, put the eight best in there and let's play it off.
I love that idea. And, you know, a lot of times those eight teams are going to be, you know, teams that have an advantage in terms of private school. I mean, Chaminade, we saw what they did this season. Number one team, essentially, to me, in the country. They're an unbelievable team. So I think you get a Chaminade team in there against a Buholtz or a Coco and let them slug it out.
Yeah.
To me, that is fair.
Yeah, and you're going to get a better game than what we got in the state championship.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
Like playing Clearwater Central Catholic, no shout to them. Like, they, you know, they were undefeated too. But that's just the level of, you know, caliber of team like that Chaminade was on this year, to whereas, like, let me see him bang against, you know, a big dog like a Lakeland, who obviously also won a state title, scored 60 points in their, you know, state championship game, you know, a Buholtz, you know, a big physical team, you know, what could they do versus a team like that instead of playing, you know, a Clearwater Central Catholic, you know, playing the Trinities and the UCs of the world, you know.
Yep, I get it. So, I'm with you. Yeah. I think that would have been the way to go. I do think, like a lot of these FHA Board of Directors meetings, I think a lot of things are rushed and not prepared properly to give people on that board who are voting for this a true overview of what's happening. That's been my one knock on that. And this is happens to be a new board of directors. Nine of them, I believe, were implemented by the governor this year. So, you know, this is their first real order of business, and a lot of disjointedness, a lot of
Everybody said it seemed very chaotic and not organized.
Yeah, and you're, you know, I think through the years, through different FHA leadership, there's not been good communication with its coaches, with the athletic directors, with state associate, you know, coaches associations within the state. So I do think that this was another case of that. It's similar to Suburban Metro, like, hey, we're changing the whole playoff system. I mean, there was a board member last time who had no idea what they were voting on in Suburban Metro. And, you know, and again, I think it's just a lack of being prepared, a lack of informing constituents around the state, coaches, teachers, athletic directors. And I think we saw that there's no clear consensus on what is best for the state. And I don't think there's anything best for the state. I do think people heard the open division and thought of something like the college football playoff, where it completely devalues the rest of the postseason system in terms of, you know, classifications. If you kept a Suburban Metro, if you go 1A through 7A, you know, that state championship format essentially becomes the college bowl system, in a sense, you know, where it's devalued from that perspective. So I don't know what is going to eventually happen. Right now, what has passed is they have gone back to districts in the district games being mandated, 1A through 7A. No in-season district tournament, no open division for now. So I've said it before, but I think it's like, you know, out with the new, in with the old kind of situation.
Yeah, what's up with that? What's crazy, too, is, you know, we talked about that end of the district thing, the end of the season, and I wasn't clear 100% on it. But then after I thought about it, I was like, that would kind of be fun to have, you know, those late games right there, basically the last 2 weeks of the season, essentially almost be mini playoff games to, like, make that end of the season, like, really relevant and, like, you know, fun. You know, so I think that would be kind of a cool feature instead of playing, you know, week six or seven, you're playing a district game that was important. Yes, that's important week six or seven, but having it there at the end right there, it's like, you know, like I say, it's almost like piggybacking playoff games before the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, it might work.
It's exciting in that.
Right.
But again,
it seemed like it was kind of be chaotic. Like, okay, this team's not in a district championship. Like, who are they going to play? So scheduling wise,
that was a legitimate concern.
Right.
You know, if you have districts that are seven teams, the top four make it, the next three that are not in the district tournament, well, suddenly you don't have games now.
Right.
And you've got to fill two games. And, you know, people on that board of directors are saying, hey, we rely on these games. And if we're having to give up potentially two games at the end of the year that could be home games for us, that's a lot of money we're losing. So, you know, there was not situation. There
it
was
didn't
nothing,
seem like a plan
right,
in place to
nothing,
get it figured out. Yeah.
There was nothing addressed. It was like, hey, we're going to have this in-season district tournament. And, okay, what happens to the district winners? How do they advance to the playoffs? I mean, is the runner-up in that district going to the playoffs too? So too many gray areas, too thrown together. The FHSA, again, did a lot of homework on this and legwork, Craig Damon and staff, but not presented well to a lot of people to get them to kick back ideas and kind of chew on it and see the reality of something like this happening. So I think that has been a weakness of the FHSA for many, many years, just not informing leadership. And I look at Georgia across the border and say, man, why are they able to do things so smoothly? The things are updated on their website. People can look on it when the board is voting. They know exactly what they're voting for. So I do wish that Florida could have a little bit better grasp on things and be able to kind of, you know, get inform people of what people, you know, what this board is voting on before it actually gets there and gets up for discussion.
Yeah, they need to have some focus groups, man. What's going on?
Really? Like, it's unbelievable.
They need to go sit with Georgia in one of their conventions or whatever and see, like, how do you guys do this? Can we just sit in the back of the room and watch y'all guys? You know, it's like, come on, man.
It is unbelievable how disorganized Florida High School Athletic Association has been over the years. And, again, I think they do have information. I think the staff works hard. I think that they do surveys and everything to get information. But I think where they fall short is, and the FHSA may have the information, but they're not getting it out to their you know, to their members, to their coaches. You know, the Florida Athletic Coaches Association, for instance, wasn't, you know, consulted or kind of give feedback on this. So I do think that FHSA needs to do a better job of informing and saying, hey, this is the option we're looking at. And I just don't think they do a good job of that. But playoff system, going back to one, basically eight classifications, again, no Suburban Metro, so that is what's been decided at this point. Reclassification is currently in process, and there will be a new Board of Directors meeting again in the first of the year to kind of discuss going forward. So that's the FHSAA playoff update. Now we kind of, like we talked about last week, want to look back at the season individually and see what we have in terms of our best players. And we decided to do our four best offensive and four best defensive players and sponges. I put these teams together every year.
Yeah.
And it is one of the most challenging things
it is.
That we do. And I get input from coaches, and it's just it is so tough. And you're looking at these guys saying, man, how do I cut these guys down? It's tough to do.
No, it is. And, like, you know, because it's, you know, it's one of those things of like a numbers-based thing, you know, eye test type thing. It's just like, you know, like when you see guys like kind of like the Heisman, you know, or, you know, it's just not a statistical thing. You're like, let me see what this guy really does on the field, what kind of a difference maker he is. How does this guy project maybe in college? Is he going to be that next level guy? You know, and then everybody's kind of like, when you have so many kids in the pot, you're like, how do you just select this many?
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely tough to cut down guys and pick between, you know, like the ton of talented guys we have across the city.
It is tough. So we decided four offensive and four defensive players, and we'll kind of expand on this as we go through these numbers, but I think our offensive guys, Sponge, are probably going to be the same.
Yeah.
We've talked a little bit about this beforehand, but my four top offensive guys, and I think you have some of the same, Bartram running back, Lathan Biddle, St. Augustine receiver, Carl Jenkins Jr., St. Aug quarterback, Lachlan Hewlett for me, and then Mandarin receiver, Jamie French, is my fourth, no particular order. And it was tough, man, to come up with these four. You know, Lachlan did not play in all the games.
Yeah.
He missed three games, I believe, and still had an unbelievable season. 158, 253 passing, 29-92, 26 touchdowns, five picks, three rushing TDs. And I look back at, you know, comparing to Lachlan to Tremel, and, man, it is so tough to go between those guys. I think you may have Tremel on your list, so I went with Lachlan. And, you know, I look at Lachlan and – you know, I look at backup Dylan Cook's numbers, and I think, man, if those two were just one
merged,
guy, that's what Lachlan would be more. His numbers would be more true there. Lachlan is a junior. Tremel is a junior.
Yeah.
So I've got Lachlan over Tremel in that quarterback spot. Lathan Biddle led the state in rushing, second toughest schedule in the state behind IMG. 21-98 on 299, 26 touches. Unbelievable career for him. 41-22 rushing yards in his career, 58 touchdowns. So many good players in the backfield this year, too. Devontae Lyons, his St. John's County teammate there at St. Aug. Mandarin running back, Tiant Weish, unbelievable season for him. Receiver Jamie French, to me, has been phenomenal. I think he may be the best overall player in our area. 1247, receiving 14 touchdowns. Carl Jenkins Jr., I love Carl. He has had a remarkable season, and he's off to an unbelievable start in his career. 62 catches, 1273, 16 touchdowns for the runner-up Yellow Jackets. So just tough to pick these guys and break them down into four, but those are my four.
100%. Like, we were dead even on all of them, and I took Tremel, who you basically ran down all his numbers anyways, too, to whereas, like, definitely if you look in the area who the top two quarterbacks were who led both of their teams to a state title, Tremel Jones and Lachlan Hewlett, like, they've been the most consistent. They've been the best guys. They've led the team, you know, to get there. You got to have your quarterback, your horse, you know, your play caller, all that to, you know, run the offense and be as good as you can be. And those guys did that all season long. And that's why I took Tremel just over Lachlan just because he had a little bit better number wise.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the other great part about this, as we're talking about this, all these guys, like, these guys are juniors, man. Like,
too,
we get to see them again next year. You know, it's not – they got to go – they're going early. You know, no, we get to see these guys again, you know, next year. I also had Biddle on there who's obviously the senior, but, you know, leading the state in rushing, you know, like you just said, with the toughest schedule, you know, one of the toughest schedules in the state, you know, just to bang like he did was a tough, you know, guy to bring down, you know, ton of yards, ton of touchdowns. And then I love the two receivers. I love Jamie and I love Carl Jenkins too. Also, the other two guys that we kind of had in the mix there that it's hard to cut these guys off, like a Naeem Burrows, mm-hmm. like a, you know, a Maddox Spencer. Those guys are machines at receiver as well. So it's like, you know, it's hard to pick between the four, the eight, the ten, however many guys we got. But Jamie, like you said, I think might be one of the truest wide receivers we've had mm-hmm. in a while, just in our area, as, you know, going to the next level in another year to Bama. And then, you know, Jenkins was, you know, St. Aug's big dog, you know, and he had a heck of a year. And that whole, like, the theme of this, too, is who had the best offenses? These guys, how far did they go? State championship runs. Mm-hmm. And it all leads to these guys are the big-time playmakers, you know. Like you said, even Weish, you know, he was the bell cow for that running game along with, like, a Deshard Westcott. So, like, those offenses went as these guys went, and these were basically, you know, the best players mm-hmm. in the city. So yeah. it's a no-brainer, but then in a sense it's hard to say this guy, you know, also, you know, had a good season for them, you know. So it's one of these things is you got to choose somebody, and like I say, these guys I felt like were the biggest playmakers around on offense in the 904.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's so tough to get down when you whittle it down. Some years are easier because you don't have that many standout players.
Yeah, you have like an Orel who goes for 2,000.
Yeah,
it was defensive guy. He did it all, you know, so that was easy.
Last year was about as easy as you get. I mean, Orel was the player of the year for all the for our publication as well as every other publication in town, station in town, paper in town. He was fantastic. So you don't have a guy like that this year. Just so many good guys. Switching gears to the defensive side of the ball, I think this is a pretty good list too. Another very tough decision to do it, but I got two guys from Baker County, Torin Brazell, defensive end, Khalil Cummings, those two guys.
Tornadoes, baby.
Yeah, Tornadoes. So Bradford was our number two team for much of the season, played for a state championship, lost to Cocoa 20-6. But Torin Brazell, big defensive lineman from Bradford. He's a two-time all-area selection for us. 62 tackles,
beast.
31 for TFL, 16 sacks, 2 picks, 4 forced fumbles. Just an unbelievable season for him. He was just a monster. Another defensive line guy for me, Garrison Butler of Bowles. Best season of his career. True defensive lineman, 88 tackles, 11 sacks, 3 forced fumbles, 21 TFLs. Another just wrecking ball on that offensive or defensive line. Drake Stubbs, amazing postseason, 6 picks, 3 in 2 weeks for him. He is another junior. He's from Mandarin.
Yeah.
He is back again. And then my last guy, kind of a defensive Swiss Army knife, Khalil Cummings from Bradford, 82 tackles, 4 picks, corner safety kind of guy. Also 12 touchdown catches on offense and just a remarkable career for Khalil.
Yeah, Khalil's like my athlete. If I could pick any guy who I'd want on my team just to be able to say, okay, go cover their best guy, go play center field at safety, get, you know, picks all day. Oh, then go line up at receiver and catch 850 yards mm-hmm. for 12 TDs. Yeah, he's my guy. So, like, I love Khalil, too. So, he's not my defensive guy, but he'd be my, like, all-star athlete, whatever. My guys, I obviously got Brazell, too, because he's a monster. He went through his numbers, complete beast, tackles for loss, sacks, you know, getting mm-hmm. interceptions, monster. I also had Stubbs back there because he's, like, probably one of the best players in Duval. St. John's, he's in our little area. He's probably, like, one of the, you know, the best defensive guys we've had in a while, too. You know, when you talk about pure, you know, safety, you know, guy who can tackle, guy who can make, you know, breaks on the ball, gets interceptions, just kind of like that magnet, always around the ball, finds himself in good, you know, situations to be close to the football, to make plays on it. Like, so I love Stubbs, and like I say, he's only a junior, so we get him back. And then I went with Mandarin's, you know, leading tackler, who was like one of the leading tacklers in the state,
mm-hmm.
Jackson Copeland, 138 tackles, 9 sacks, 19 tackles for loss. He was their tackling machine, like, kind of like the quarterback of their defense in that middle. You know, he was a lockdown guy. And then I went kind of off the cuff just because I love this kid. I think he's a difference changer. I think he's a game wrecker. And that's Giant Big Cat Simon from Reigns. Like, he's a D-tackle. And you think, okay, what's the numbers? Almost 70 tackles, 8 sacks, you know, and then 14 tackles for loss. And that's not like your edge guy who's, you know, coming off the end. He's literally in the middle just, like, wrecking havoc.
Yeah,
like,
6'3", 280.
He's a young cat, too. So he's back again next year, too. So, like, I'm almost projecting him out as he's going to be one of these big-time guys that we've had, you know, being heavily recruited by a lot of teams. He's just, like, a difference maker on your defense. When you can add a guy like him on your defense, he's what makes everything else better. Like, you know, by him pressuring the quarterback, you know, that's what makes Kilpatrick and Sharif Jackson get picks because they can cover because this guy's getting pressure and they're throwing balls quick, and those guys are getting INT. So, like, those are my four guys on defense. And like I say, there was many other guys we had that we could have put on there, you know, but like I say, these were the four best that I think that I could choose from.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking Kilpatrick and Sharif, 13 picks for those two guys combined.
Yeah.
And it starts up front.
Yeah.
I mean, your best friend as a defensive back is that pressure that comes from the defensive line or your front seven or front eight. And Jion was exceptional at getting there. And, you know, it helps that he goes in practice every day against the big Solomon Thomas, five-star offensive lineman.
That's big time,
offensive lineman, and we were not even mentioning those guys this year. But you talk about some monsters there, Jake Granera, Derek Plaz, Solomon Thomas. I mean, that's three guys right there who were, you know, Zach Marshall, he's another guy I have in there from Bartram.
Yeah.
He's just a beast as a junior, so he's going to be a highly recruited guy. I mean, we're talking about offensive tackles. We didn't even list those among our top four in offensive line, but there is just some very good guys. So we're talking at all eight of these guys here.
Yeah.
Who do you pick as your best player among these eight?
Like you say, it's tough. That is tough.
It's tough.
If I was to pick out of those eight guys, the number one guy, like difference maker, it's hard not to go with Biddle just because he was the leading rusher in the state. I'd probably lean towards him, but then if a guy who I think can just totally change like your offense would be like a Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's that dynamic where you have to worry about him so much that he'll take two guys. So that opens up everything else for, you know, that's why I think they were able to run the ball so successfully because teams had to key on him. Because if you leave him one-on-one, Tremel was going to hit him and get the one-on-one matchups. So I'd probably go Biddle and then Jamie too. But then, like I say, it's hard not like to leave like a Khalil Cummings out because how important of a guy is he to that Bradford team? Because if you completely take him off that team, he's probably one of your best defenders. Like not to take anything away from Brazil, but like, you know, he's got to basically guard the number one receiver or play center field and be that ball hawk and safety back there, but then also be your leading receiver and one of your main guys on offense. So I'd probably go Biddle, but those would be my next two in line.
It's tough. I'm telling you, you're looking at – especially –
and it's hard not to be like, who's the commander-in-chief, the quarterback?
Yeah,
you know,
it's so tough. Like, it is so tough to put these together, especially when there's good – talent. And we don't have talent like this every year.
No.
And, you know, I hear people talk about this year's recruiting class. I mean, a Super 11 or a Elite 11 kid, and Colin Hurley going to LSU. He's kind of an afterthought.
Yeah. No, he had a good season, too.
Yeah.
When you compile the numbers, you know, they were probably should have been in the state championship, you know, lost a couple games they shouldn't have lost. But, you know, you go by number wise, you know, Colin had a good season.
He had a good
year.
He's a true junior.
Exactly. He's a true junior, along with these guys, too. They all should be technically playing another year of high school football, which would be great. But, you know, Colin, hats off. He's going to go get in the mud of Baton Rouge and get in that college life. But, you know, that's the thing. It's like, you know, these quarterbacks, they all played pretty good.
Yep. So it is tough. It is really tough.
So who's your number one guy then?
Man, I don't know. It would be between French and Biddle. I think Hewlett would be in there if
he played the whole
time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That might have been the X factor if he played the full season, had what his numbers would have looked like.
Right. And, so you're talking
and maybe if one of these guys would have won the state championship, you know,
because
it goes like we'll look at Heisman voting. You know, Bo Nix and Penix were there because they're in the college football playoff, but Jayden Daniels just had stupid, ridiculous numbers.
Yeah.
So
if for Hewlett. You know, to your point there, he played – St. Aug played one less game anyway due to Hurricane, I believe. And St. Aug, he was injured a little bit, so Dylan Cook started a few games. So
what was Dylan's final numbers?
Dylan was up
there. I know he had some stupid
had
numbers for backup.
He had a crazy, crazy good season as a backup quarterback. So it's – had Lachlan played an entire season.
Let's try to average it in here if the games missed.
His numbers would have been – ridiculous. I think he would have been a 4,000-yard passer in that situation. Pulling up Dylan's numbers right here. Dylan's numbers, he played in five games, 57 of 79. That's crazy completion percentage, 72% completion percentage, 966 yards. You would have had pretty darn good.
Then you're adding, like I say, another game that they missed. They probably just throw a 200 on there. So, that's four bills, four racks.
Yep. So that, to me, I think Lachlan with a full season would have been pretty substantial in terms of passing numbers. And
right.
That's kind of what I'm looking at for him. So, you know, interesting to see that he did not play that full season. So, anyway, a great season for Lachlan. And a lot of this is we're looking, projecting a little bit of things and seeing how these guys would have played if they didn't play the full season. But those are our four guys a piece. Yeah, it's tough picking.
Yeah,
tough breaking down all of those. And we will have our full all news for Jack's team coming up here soon during the holiday season. But, man, Sponge, what a ride it has been. Three state championship games for our Florida boys. Pierce County up in Georgia won a state championship.
Yeah.
Did you see how they won that game?
It was like a double. It was like triple overtime.
Triple overtime. Yeah. Triple OT, 48-45.
Yeah, that was wild. I was paying attention to it, and I saw it went to overtime. And then, you know, next thing you know, they're in three overtimes. That would they go for, the other team kicked a field goal, and they went for it, something like
other
that?
Other team kicked a field goal in the third overtime.
Yeah. And then they scored.
And Pierce County ended up having to score to win. But, man, 48-45.
Yeah.
Triple overtime. And I like it because Georgia actually used to have ties in the state championship game.
That's terrible.
Ties in the state championship game. Charlton County actually had a split state championship because they tied in a state championship game. Unbelievable. How do you have ties in the state championship?
What
like
year?
1990, I believe. Something like that. So, yeah, crazy to have ties in state championship games. So, good thing we don't have that anymore. But for Sponge Franklin, Justin Barney, thanks for sticking with us on a full season of the Varsity Podcast. We will return to you next year. Make sure to check out newsforjacks.com for our all-area football teams and other fall sports team coming to you over the holidays.